Next week, we wrap up the five-part series of Fireproof, and I want to encourage you all to be here. It's going to be a great service as we finish, and we're going to title that series or that message, Finishing Strong. This week, it's called Hang Tough, and you've sent me your questions for 3 weeks, and I have a stack of emails about that high, and we divided those all up into different categories I'll be telling you about, and we're going to be answering those questions. I want to make a couple disclaimers up first. Number one, this is an adult service. I can't control what my family's going to say, all right? So therefore, if you have kids here and you feel something might be said that will be inappropriate for your kids, I would encourage you to take them out now to the children's ministry if you want to, all right? I'm just making you aware of that. Secondly, another disclaimer I want to say to you is we are not the perfect family. We said last week every family has deficiencies. We're not experts. We're not perfect. We've had struggles like many of you, and you're going to hear about some of those today as we deal with some of those questions. You say, then why are you doing this? Number one is to encourage you. You can have struggles and still work through it. Number two is we're trying to be real. I think too often in church, I grew up in church where we kind of faked it every year. Every week when I went to church, and we don't do that here at CCV, so we're going to be pretty real and vulnerable, and hopefully it'll let you realize as believers in Christ, it's okay to be real and be yourself and allow the grace of Jesus Christ to cover that. So, man, I thank my adult kids and their spouses for being vulnerable as well and being up here, and they're going to come out. Would you give them a welcome as they kind of come out to help us out today? Every service is a little different, and you're our favorite service, so we have no idea kind of how you're going to respond. My wife, Sue, we've been married almost 41 years, and I was 11 when I got married, and kind of great there. Our oldest is Paul and his wife, Paula. They've been married over 16 years. Our second child, Kelly, and her husband, Trent, been married almost 18 years. And our youngest, Christy, and her husband, Chris, they've been married 13 years. All of our kids are in ministry, and it's incredible. We're blessed. We prayed for our kids when they were little that they'd accept Christ and grow up and serve Him. And we also prayed when they were little they'd marry a Christian spouse. And God has honored our prayer request with that. And so we are super blessed for what they're doing. You need to know that our family is a little different, a little weird. You know that if you go to this church. For example, when Paul and Paula were dating and Trent and Kelly were dating, my wife and I, the six of us, we went to California. And all the way over, we listened. We put a sermon or a series of dating tapes. And we put them in the car and listened to them all the way over. That was Welcome to the Wilson Family. I'll never forget Paula. That was kind of her first time meeting us pretty much. And I took out the first tape and I said, Paula, first question, does my son turn you on? And she goes, oh, my gosh. And she said, yes. And I said, that's a good answer. You need to do that if you're gonna date. Went on to the second question. I don't remember what the second question was, all right? But we were so unusual. We gave our kids personality tests to find out and said, you're gonna be attracted to people opposite. And when they got serious, we kind of tried to give some tests to some of their fiancés and so on. So we're a little different there, all right? But God's been good. God's been good. You know, a lot of the questions, here's the categories that kind of broke out with big stacks in each category. Here they were. Is divorce an option? Questions about should I leave my spouse? Should I hang in there? Forgiveness, sex, communication. How do you rekindle, keep romance alive? Unreal expectations in marriage. What happens if I have a spiritual mismatch? I'm married to somebody who's not a believer. I am, and that sort of thing. And then the whole issue of boundaries. There's no way that we could answer all your questions, or we'd be here till Jesus comes back, all right? But we tried to take one question from kind of each category, and hopefully in general, as you see our struggles, you'll be able to relate to those. It seems like that really the first question is communication styles, because we all have problems. And one of the keys of how you work through your problems is how you communicate. And so in my wife and I's relationship, it's easy for me to share my feelings. I can pretty much tell her what I'm thinking. I think it, say it. Sometimes don't use the right tact, but I'm able to say it pretty quick. So you usually always know what I'm thinking. What's your style of communication?
You probably never know what I'm thinking because I don't talk. He says whatever comes in his brain comes out his mouth. And for me, I like to think about it and analyze it and form my opinion slowly. And so it takes me a while to talk about what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. So we're like two opposite ends of the spectrum, and we've had to learn to find a meeting place in the middle.
Yeah. Exciting thing, we're married 41 years, and I'm still trying to figure out who she is. So that, you know, at our 60th anniversary, I'll learn something new. All right. Other communication styles. How do you other guys communicate? Chris?
Yeah, I thought for us we were really good with communication. We had a similar style until we got in our first fight, and I learned a lot from that. It was, you know, the family I grew up in, when I saw my mom and dad get in a fight, one of them would grab the car keys and go drive around the neighborhood for a while, come back, and everybody kind of act like nothing had happened. And I thought that's a pretty good way to do it. And we got in our first fight, and I'll never forget, you know, just grabbing the car keys and starting to head out the door. And she...
And I said, where do you think you are going? You're going to go drive around and try to let it go away, but I'm going to sit here and get madder and madder and madder. And when you get back, it is going to be a bigger fight than when you left. So we learn to do things my way.
So, Chris, I remember what you told me there was. She put herself in front of the door and said, basically, you're not going anywhere.
She stood in front of the door and said, we're, you know, you're not leaving. I said, oh, I am, and I didn't. So, okay. But just learning how to fight it out, and we do that now. I mean, when we have a conflict or a situation, we just, you know, it's not always a fight, but, you know, the communication.
You don't leave.
Style. Yeah, I don't leave. Yeah. I still want to sometimes, but.
Okay. Paul and Paula, how about you guys, your communication style?
I would say early on, communication was pretty easy for us. When we were dating, getting to know each other, we would talk about a lot of things, didn't have any problem communicating. It wasn't until after we got married and we realized we have conflicts. There's things that we disagree about. And each of our personality styles are to hold things in and to not talk about conflict, to avoid conflicting situations. So for us, it was very difficult. And when we finally would talk about those things, my wife gets really emotional when it's conflicting situations. So she would start crying when I would talk about those types of things. And I'd be like, I'm not going to talk about that anymore if you're going to start crying all the time. So it even hurt our communication more when that happened. So we just had to talk that through, understand each other's communication style, and now we've worked through a lot of that.
Okay. How about you guys? How about your communication?
I get asked a lot, what's it like to marry one of Dawn's daughters? You know, and I say, imagine Dawn in a woman's body. You know? It comes with some pressure, and I'll speak for my wife, extremely quick thinker, loves whatever's on her brain to vocalize. I grew up with a bit of a dysfunctional family. My mom and dad divorced when I was 3 years old, and there was some alcoholism and some other problems in that, very little affection. A lot of the words were negative, and so we learned how to not have physical touch. We learned how to hold things in and just ignore, kind of similar to Chris's family over there. Just forget about it, and everything will be okay. And then you come into this family, highly affectionate, very verbal, and it really pushed me. And for the longest time, first half of our marriage, I'd get pushed, and I'd get pushed, and then my back would hit the wall, and I'd be kind of volcanic, in a sense, in how I would erupt and communicate back. And so I've had to learn, communication-wise, to just share what I think. But she, I think, is learning, I could use 10 minutes, back off, you're standing too close, so that kind of stuff. And so that's my communication stuff.
Okay. Second question is a whole bunch of stuff regarding boundaries, dealing with in-laws, dating, adult kids living at home, discipline and raising kids. That's more of a family deal. We won't deal with that. Blended families, having friends. Do you have friends of the opposite sex and so on? Is Facebook dangerous to a 10-year semi-stagnant marriage? Anything is dangerous to a 10-year semi-stagnant marriage, okay? So there are a lot of questions regarding boundaries. Paula, why don't you go? Or you and Paul, did you have any boundaries regarding opposite sex, friendships, that sort of thing?
That was probably the one that was probably the hardest for us to work through. I'm very social, and I wanted Paul to meet and talk to my friends and stuff like I would talk to his friends, but... he had been wisely counseled by his dad to keep it at a distance with the ladies so that no emotional attachment would occur or the risk of an affair. But for a while, I was like, well, they think that you don't like him. Because they would say, you know, he doesn't want to hang out with us. He doesn't want to, like the youth coaches, and go do stuff together. So I would try to tell him to be nice and talk to him or something like that. But as the years have progressed and moral failures and affairs happen so often, now I've come to cherish it and be very grateful that he chooses to protect our marriage and me by keeping the female relationships at a distance. And he's never mean, but he's just not going to pursue a conversation or a lunch or a meeting alone with a woman. So.
Okay. Do you have, let's take a little inventory here. Do any of you, do you have friends of the opposite sex?
No.
Christy, no. Both of you? I don't.
No.
You don't?
No.
Okay. I know a lot of people do that today. To me, man, you're risking with an affair. So that's just something for us in all of our relationships as we have raised. We will not take that risk. Any other boundary issues? Trent, I think you guys have had some struggles maybe with in-laws and that situation.
Who doesn't have struggles with in-laws? But I think mine are pretty intense.
Appreciate it, man. Really appreciate it. It's really good. You're out of the will. How do you guys feel about your in-laws?
I love my in-laws.
Oh, you love your in-laws.
And I need a raise. So.
I really married into a great family, so can I please be back in
you're
the will?
In, man, you're in, yeah. Right.
The in-law struggle came probably more from my side, and I've had to learn to stand up. You know, my mom is really strong, and I love her to death, and we're really working on a lot of great things in our relationship right now. But, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago and more, she was very strong-willed, and I had just been taught all my life to let her get her way, sweep it under the rug, forget about it, ignore it, it'll be okay. Well, when that comes into my marriage relationship and my wife is hurt and I won't stand up for her, it comes across that I still maybe have the umbilical cord attached and that I love my mom more than I do my wife. And I've had to learn to stand up to my own family. And that would be one of my greatest recommendations for all of us is that you need to deal with your bloodline. Never send the in-law to go take care of a problem. I need to deal with my family. My wife, when we have struggles with my in-laws, she needs to be the one that deals with that. And that's working for us, and it's improved our marriage tremendously. You agree?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say the first 10 years, because of the way that he learned to cope with his family, he expected me to cope the same way. So he would just say to me, suck it up. You know, we're only going to be here a week. Just let her have her way, and when we're gone, we'll go back to our life. And I was thinking, I can't do that for the next 60 years, you know, because marriage was life for me. So I needed to get this figured out. And so it really has improved once he decided that that was going to be his role and stand up in that. So.
You know, there was a lot of questions similar there of people saying, my husband always runs back to take care of his parents' situation in town. He never addresses our issues and all those sorts of things. And I think the Bible reminds us, for this reason, a man will leave his mother and father and be united to his wife, and the two will become one. And really, you are at risk if you do not stand up for your spouse against your parents. It will tell your spouse, wait a minute, I think you still love mom and dad more. Not that we hate our parents, but you left and you made a choice to start your family. For my wife and I, as our parents, aging parents, get a lot older and have to be taken care of, we've made a decision. I deal with my family and she deals with her mother and her family, because we would choose to deal with it different. And even though she doesn't agree maybe how I deal with my family and I don't agree that she deals with her mother, we've agreed to disagree in order to deal with that and move on. Would that be fair? Okay. Number three. Trust me, she'll tell me. Number three, this would be interesting. What is the biggest challenge you've had to deal with during the course of your marriage, and how in the world were you able to work through it? So what's your biggest challenge? How did you work through it? Chris and Chrissy, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I can start. I would say our biggest challenge was probably when Chris decided to come clean about his problem with pornography, and that was really devastating for me. I felt like It was the same as if he had had an affair. And I, for myself, had decided that marriage was forever, that divorce was never going to be an option for me. And so although I was devastated and at times I felt like the only way I can ever get out of this miserable situation is for him to die, I knew that that was not going to be a good option. We didn't have life insurance. No, I'm just kidding. So I had to do what I needed to do to rebuild my trust in him. And we went and got counseling, and we made communication a big priority for us. And now, thankfully, through that, because we stuck it through that really hard time, and I decided that it was important for us to work it out. And so because of that, little fights and little problems are just that now. They're just little fights, and we can totally get through it because we've jumped such a huge hurdle. And so I'm really thankful for our relationship, and I'm glad that we stuck it through, and I feel like we're way stronger than we were in the past, and I don't want him to die anymore, so that's great.
Good job.
I would say for us, probably the biggest struggle was expectations of what we both expected out of a marriage. It took us about 5 to 7 years to kind of understand, this is what the other person was expecting in this marriage. And it was these two words that we discovered. It was the word soulmate and companion. And what I realized was my wife, when she got married to me, was looking for a soulmate. She wanted me to come home after work, put the kids to bed, lay down on the couch with her across my legs, look at her in the eyes, and talk for like 3 hours about everything that happened that day and how I was feeling and everything. Well, for me, that's not what I was looking for in a marriage. That wasn't my expectation, not right or wrong, just different. I was looking for a companion. I wanted to come home after work, put the kids to bed, lay on the bed together, and watch the Diamondbacks game. And maybe we spoke if they scored a run or something bad happened, you know, and that's how we communicated. So it was just very different. And what we realized was we needed to try to meet each other's expectations. But ultimately, we had to realize that our soulmate should be God, that that's the person that could meet all of our needs, that we weren't going to be able to meet all of each other's needs. So that was a big thing we had to decide. And then we also had to just kind of say, how can I become more of a soulmate to you? And she had to say, how can she become more of a companion to me? How can I talk more? How can she just listen more, hang out together? And then we also allowed each other's friends to get involved in this process. And at times I would say, hey, I'm going to watch all the kids. You go out for a couple days and just spend some time with your girlfriends and get that talk time that I know you need. And she would do the same type of thing for me with my guy friends. So I think it was just understanding expectations, helping to meet him as best we could, but ultimately realizing that Christ was the only one that could meet all our expectations.
Okay. What would you say is the biggest challenge we've had to deal with?
Probably just accepting that we are so different and that we have to find a middle ground because you're so out there and I'm so back here. So it's like I've had to learn to step out of my comfort zone and be more of an extrovert than is comfortable for me. And
so have I. I've had to work on that.
I don't think you've learned anything, but that's okay. So anyway, it's just that we're so different. We are so different that, and that's a good thing because together we can do so much more than either one of us could do separately.
Yeah.
So it's learning to embrace our differences and you know, draw on each other's strengths.
It's interesting. There was a lot of questions about soulmate, you know, like Paul were talking about there, you know, I'm married right now. My husband is a great husband. He's great with the kids. He's phenomenal, but he's not my soulmate. I really feel like my soulmate was my high school sweetheart. And what do? I feel trapped. Do I leave my husband and go back and find my soulmate? You know, what do you do? Okay. All of us believe there's no such thing as soulmates. Okay? I mean, our spouse now is
not
our
anymore.
Soulmate. Pardon me?
Not anymore.
Yeah, not anymore, yeah. And so that's the devil talking to you. That's the devil telling you, again, those unreal expectations. I've really got a great husband. He's great with the kids. But, you know, man, it's just not that incredible connection that I had on those 2 dates back in high school. And I need to leave and go do that. That's the devil. That's the devil. It's unreal again. And so I think you learn to fall in love. There's not that just one person for you out there that's your soulmate. What would you say is the biggest challenge you guys have had to deal with, and how did you work through it?
I think Kelly and mine are probably different, actually. Growing up, very insecure, not believing in myself. You hear a lot of negativity, you begin to believe it. And I married into a family that shared a lot of affection, a lot of love, a lot of words of encouragement, began to tell me I'm a champion, I'm a leader, and I began to believe that and develop into that. And with time, you know, you marry into a strong-willed woman who has natural leadership in her. She's been brought up in it. She would lead a lot of the way, and I had no problem. I grew up with a strong-willed mother, and I would just kind of get into the background. And as I have developed into a leader and begin to believe in myself, I think maybe some of the struggle was, as I look back 5-6 years ago, as I transitioned into more of a leadership position and took charge in some things, there was some struggles, almost a power struggle between the two of us. As a pastor of my own church, I have a lot of ladies who will say, how can I get my husband to change? And my first question is, do you really want him to change? Because I find when he begins to change, a lot of you ladies like that power. You like to make the decisions. You like to lead the way you do. Do you really want him to change? Because when he does, you're going to have to let him. And that's probably been a struggle for us in the past.
Yeah, definitely. I would say the same thing. It's a struggle that I have to constantly work on, too. And I think it comes from how I was raised, too, because I was raised with a different kind of man in my life that has a different kind of personality. And now I have to trust this new man in my life and how he chooses to do things and how he chooses to make decisions. And a lot of times I'll find myself, even though I've said I want him to lead and I want him to do it his way, before he steps out there and makes that decision, I'm kind of like, now did you do this? And did you make sure you did this? And he kind of gives me that look like, listen, do you want me to lead or not? You know? And so I have to remind myself to just keep my mouth shut and let him do it his way and trust that his way is the way that it should be done.
Trent, I noticed your T-shirt there. That's kind of interesting. Is that something new in your marriage? Or what's that?
I have to remind myself. I have a one of these in every color. No, just kidding, but no, it means nothing. I do what she says all the time.
Number four question. A lot of questions regarding the subject of sex. Do you ever notice a person of the opposite sex and want to look more? How do you stop? What do you do when your spouse will not keep themselves up physically? Do you still find yourself attracted? What advice should you give others to be more sexually available and in tune with their partner's needs? How often should a couple make love? How long is normal to go without sex? Here was the greatest question of the whole pile to me. I really love this question. Somebody put, why is it so difficult to abstain from sex prior to marriage and so easy to abstain after you get married? And I thought, that's good.
I wrote that question.
You wrote that question. You wrote that question. All right, that's good. All right.
You guys are the expert, so.
So anybody want to deal with the sexual aspect here? Go for it. Come to the front.
Well, one of the things that I've learned in 40 years of marriage is that a lot of people, including me at one point in time, don't realize that sex has anything to do with God except that it's a function of the body. And in reality, I've come to understand that it has everything to do with God because he created us as sexual beings so that we could understand, we could learn how to be intimate. And the more intimate we are with each other, the more we understand how to be intimate with him. So as we give of ourselves to our spouse, we learn how to give of ourselves to God. And I think that's really what he wants us to get out of the whole intimacy deal. Another thing that I've discovered in talking to women over the years is that there's an awful lot of women out there who have been married for a long time and have never had an orgasm. And that's really sad because that's a part of the pleasure that God intended for us to enjoy as married couples. And we had to learn how to make that happen with advice, with books, with doctors, with, you know, just experimenting with whatever. It's something that you shouldn't give up on and just say, well, You know, this is just the way it is. Because I'm telling you, it's not like the movies, and I'm sure you've discovered that. It's not this simultaneous, glorious moment where it just happens because two people get excited.
Slam them against the wall.
Yeah. So, that's one of the things that I tried to prepare my girls for when they got married, was that it's not going to be like the movies, and they discovered that for themselves. It's something that you have to make it be what you want it to be, and it can be as good as you decide it's going to be, but you do have to work at it.
Yeah, and I think for most guys, it's easier for them to do than women. And my response would be, guys, after 41 years, you help the lady and meet her needs, then you can take care of your needs, all right? And if you don't meet her needs, you're going to be dead meat. So, you know, just do that. And I'm telling you, really, we've had to struggle with that a lot, and make adjustments and talk to people and read books and so on, because that we came into the marriage very ill-prepared for that. You've heard me say, my dad's a farmer. You want to understand the real key here? Watch that bull and that cow. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I did that the first night of our honeymoon, and it didn't work after that. Okay, and it did not work after that. So that's why my wife was able to tell her daughters, it is not going to be what you think, okay? And it wasn't what you thought it was going to be either.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. Dad, if you're watching, shame on you, you know, okay? And so I had to talk to my son, you know, and talk and say, hey, look, here's some things. It's not the real deal. You need to think about this. It's not, movies are not reality, and so on. You were sharing, I think, Kelly and Trent. Kelly, something I think that you have worked through, I think that's incredible. Share that a little bit.
Well, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and I know that, I'm sure there's other ladies that have experienced this in here, when you're laying in bed with your husband, and it's, you know, the lights are out, and you're thinking to yourself, he's going to reach his hand over here any minute, and I know what that means. And I've been there before, to where, you know, I knew he was going to, and I just didn't have the desire at that particular moment. And I totally forgot what I was going to say. And I didn't have the desire at that particular moment. And it wasn't that I didn't want to be with him. I just wasn't all worked up at that particular moment. And so I decided that I was going to bring God into this area of my life. And it may seem weird, and it was weird at first to think, I'm actually going to pray about this. I can't believe I'm going to pray about this. But I laid there, and I began to just pray that, God, you know, I just pray that you would just fill my entire body with this sexual energy that just is stimulating my whole body. And if he reaches over here to touch me, even if just his fingertips touch me, I just pray that that would just send this sexual energy all throughout my body. And of course, he's just now finding out I've been praying these prayers. I'm like, oh, great. But anyway, every single time I have made the choice to pray that prayer, and don't get me wrong, there are times that I'm like, I'm not praying the prayer tonight, you know? But every time that I have made the choice to pray that prayer, it has worked 100% of the time. So that has really, and now that I'm like saying it out loud, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to do that so much more.
Okay. Next question. There's a lot of you singles here that have been here for this Fireproof series, and man, I appreciate you hanging in here, because it's not just a series about marriage, it's about relationships. And a lot of you are single, never been married. Some of you have married, divorced, you're single now. What would you say is the most important thing I could do as a single to prepare myself for marriage? Chris, you want to tackle that one?
Sure. I think the thing that you would obviously hear in a series like this is you need to work on your relationship with Christ. And it's more than just coming to church. It's really focusing on whether you've always been single, or you find yourself single unexpectedly. This is your chance to work on your relationship with Christ. And I think that's the biggest thing you can do to prepare yourself. And I think once you've found someone that you think, that might be the person I want to marry, that I spend the rest of my life with, go on a mission trip. Go somewhere Don't go on a mission trip to Hawaii or Scottsdale. You know, go somewhere it's a little rough. And go to Mexico, build a house. Go somewhere and just serve. And you'll get to see that person in a stressful situation. And you'll get to see the real them. Do they love God? Do they relate to him the same way you do? You're not looking for someone who just calls himself a Christian. You're looking for someone who has the same passion and heart for Christ that you have. And so I've told a lot of people that in the past. Go on a mission trip. I think that always is great advice. Go do something where you see them in a stressful environment.
Paul and Paula, I think you guys, when you were dating, you went on a mission trip together and really saw each other in a little bit of different light.
That was a huge turning point for me. We weren't dating yet. We were very interested in each other, but it was a chance to observe him without him trying to impress me because we were dating. I was able to observe him and the way that he served God and the way that what his leadership was like and his servant heart towards the lost and how he worked really hard and didn't complain. And so it was just a good chance to observe a part of him without the pressure of, well, I'm trying to make myself look good for you because we're dating. And I would highly recommend that too. But another part with that is just the spending time together, to not rush it because there is so much to deal with. And as well as your relationship with Christ, but when you're spending time with them, get a chance to observe their family. Get to know what the in-laws are like. Because it is a huge part, not just how you'll deal with them, but how they deal with their parents and how what he's observed as a married couple all their life is pretty much what he's going to bring to the table. And exactly what I did with my parents, I brought that to the table. So you have to, whether it's a perfect scenario or not, just be really realizing that you're having to deal with those problems or those situations when you're married and be committed to it, because it is for life.
You know, I didn't talk about this in the other three services, but when she was saying, you know, don't go too fast, man, I agree with that. There's also a flip side of don't wait too long. I received, you know, one note said, we've been dating for 8 years, and we got married, and we've been married 10 months, and it's terrible. We went through Christian counseling and everything. My thought was, not that you dated for 8 years, but what did you do when you dated for 8 years? My guess would be you were intimate with each other. And so if you dated for 8 years and you had sex and everything else, in reality, you were married, you just didn't live together. And then there's nothing really that much different when you go ahead and put the rings on your finger. So we dated 2 years. How long did you guys date?
Too long.
It was 2 years?
Well, like a year and a half.
Okay, year and a half. How long did you guys date?
About a year and a half.
Year and a half?
2 years.
2 years. Okay. You say, man, 2 years? Isn't that quick? I couldn't control myself anymore. Okay. So to me, it was like, hey, if we're going to remain and not have sex together, there's no way I could have done it for 8 years. I'm guilty. I couldn't have held out that long. You turned me on, man. I could not have held out. Okay. So 2 years, and we're in. All right. Let's move on. You still turned me on. Yeah, okay. Think long term. All right, number 7. What is the one practical thing you do to keep your marriage strong over the years? Been married 13, 16, 18, 41. What would you say is one thing that you try to do to keep your marriage strong? Whoever wants to go first, go for it.
Go ahead, Reed. I think a vital thing that's worked for me with my wife is a bit of a twinge in my thinking or your thinking. When you and I stop as a married couple needing each other, because reality, we need water, we need food, we need Christ. When I stop needing her to do certain things, and I actually started showing that I want her, it's a little change in how you treat one another and respond to one another. That's been huge, to just focus on that mentality. I don't need her to clean the house to make me happy. I don't need her to do certain things. I want her. And when I honor her that way, and I honor some of the teachings of Christ where he says, consider others better than yourself. Start treating your spouse better than yourself, and you serve her or him. And it will make a tremendous impact in your marriage. Think about meeting their needs and wants first, and in return, yours will be met.
Okay.
I think the same thing for me, the way that our marriage has grown stronger and that I think it will continue to go stronger is that I have tried to take my focus off of my marriage and on my relationship with Christ, because it seemed like the more I focused on my marriage, it was distracting from my relationship with Christ. So the more I focus on Christ and try to be Christ-like, the easier it is to make good choices in my marriage, because I could have the perfect marriage and not have relationship with Christ and spend eternity in hell. And I remind myself that someday I'm going to stand before God by myself without my husband or my parents or anybody else, and I'm going to have to answer to God for my relationship. So the most important thing to keep your marriage strong is to have a strong, connected relationship with Christ.
Excellent. Chris, you want to say it?
Yeah, I think the thing we try to do is, or, you know, I try to just always be mindful of is just keeping our relationship prioritized, even with our kids and our jobs and our friends and, you know, the things we like to do for fun. I tell my kids all the time, I love your mom a lot more than I love you. And they're okay with that. They really, I think they thrive on that, knowing that security, that this relationship is going to last forever. They can count on us. And I tell my kids all the time, you know, when you get out of college, you have to leave. You can't live here anymore. And, you know, we're counting that down with a calendar, you know, till they're all gone. And just, you know, even yesterday, it wasn't anything we were talking about. I'm walking down the stairs with my daughter, and she says, Dad, besides Mom, who's the prettiest girl in our house? Me or, you know, Abby, my sister? And I, you know, I had to tell her it was a tie. But she knows that my affection's for her mom, and that she's totally all right with that. And I think we invert that a lot of times today. So just having that priority of our relationship's more important than our jobs, than our friends, and especially our kids. And we take time for that. We do things, it's just the two of us, and we just keep that in the right place, the right priority.
Paul and Paula?
I would definitely agree with all that was said there. And I guess just to say something a little different maybe is just work at it. It's not just going to get better on its own. You can't just exist and think, well, it'll get better someday, or I'll just pray more. You have to work at it. You have to get involved. You have to be active. I mean, we've gone to marriage classes, we've gone to marriage seminars, we've read books, we talk about it. And like Chris said, we prioritize our relationship above others. I mean, we've had a lot of babysitters throughout the 16 years of our marriage where we go out by ourselves, spend time together. We go on vacations, just the two of us without our kids, and leave them alone to know that this relationship is most important. So we just try to really work at it and spend the time to make it be as good as it can.
You know, we're all in ministry, and I know that all three of my kids have spent tons of money on babysitters because they're in ministry. But I guarantee you, any amount of money they spend is minimal compared to having to divide your estate through a divorce fight. Okay? So, I mean, they've done that a lot. And we pretty much modeled that for them. When we moved out here in 75, I think Paul was 5, Kelly was 3, Christy wasn't born yet. All of our relatives pretty much were back in Kansas, and we were out here in ministry, and we were in youth ministry. We didn't have a lot of money. Our date night was money night, when we'd call on visitors and go to McDonald's and hire a babysitter and talk in between visits and so on. So we have had to do that, but we made a priority that our marriage would come before the kids. Now, don't hear this that we don't love our kids. Every statistic that I read says one of the biggest fears of kids today is their parents are going to get a divorce. And my philosophy is the best thing I can do for my kids' self-security is the way I treat their mother, to love their wife. And so what we would do, when they were little, we would find babysitters. We'd sometimes go away for a week, the two of us. Then we'd do a family vacation for a week. And we really made that a priority a lot when our kids were little. I agree with Chris. I think today, parents, you idolize your kids too much. And we have an inverted culture today where kids are first. And that will pay long-term major problems. Because if you raise kids that are always the center of attention, I don't want them marrying my grandkids. Because there's no way my grandkids can meet their needs if everybody's always done everything for them. And so, again, I'm not saying you neglect your kids, but that relationship is going to go the distance. And so that has kind of been a priority for us. Anything else you want to say there, dear?
Just that it still is. I think from the first time we interviewed for ministry, one of the things that Don said was, before you hire me, you need to know that my relationship with my wife is going to come before the church. And that said volumes to me about how much he valued our relationship as a couple. And for the rest of our lives, it's going to be you and me, babe, you know, and the other things in our life will come and go, but we're going to be hanging in there to the end together. So if we neglect that relationship, then, you know, at some point we're going to look at each other and say, who are you and why do I need you and what are you here for, you know? Yeah. And we don't want that to happen. So we constantly work on keeping our marriage the priority of our lives.
And then Paul said, it takes a lot of work. If you want it to be great, you can't slack off. You really, really have to keep working. I want to say to our church, and you guys are great, but for those of you that are visiting from other churches or whatever, the best thing you can do for your pastor is to love the pastor's wife. Treat the pastor's wife with respect and honor them, because they often feel like the church is, you know, our mistress, right? Yesterday, I got home, and my wife had opened a note, and I got home late last night, and I read the note, and another woman from the church had written my wife a note and said how much she honored her and respected her for standing by me and supporting me and that sort of thing. I know it did volumes for my wife. I'm going to tell you something. It did more for me. It did more for me that somebody would take the time to write a note, because I'm up front. I get the strokes. I get the emails, good and bad. Behind the scenes, you have no idea what a pastor's wife goes through. And the fact that somebody took time, wrote her a note, and said, man, I honor you and appreciate you, that was volume. So I just say to all of our staff and so on, their wives, man, honor them. The spouses, encourage them, because it really, really helps them work stronger on their marriage. Well, we've hoped that we've encouraged you. Again, please understand, we're not perfect. You've already heard it. We got deficiencies, but I think one thing it's key here, we have committed to each other that we're going to go the distance. And so when those struggles come, we have committed, we have got to get after it and work through it, whatever happens, to rebuild that trust so that we can honor God till death do us part. Let's pray. Lord God, thank you. You are an awesome, incredible God. And I thank you, God, that you love us. As Kelly said, our relationship to you is more important than our relationship to our spouse. And so I pray, Lord, for everybody here, no matter where we are in our marital relationships, it's so easy for us to say, you know, I got to work on my marriage, when in reality, we've got to work on our adventure with you. So, Lord, help us to put that first. I pray for couples, wherever they are today, that through what we've shared, they will realize we all struggle and we all can work through our struggles and we can go the distance. So encourage marriages, encourage spouses. For those that have had their trust violated, God, help them to offer forgiveness and recommit, first of all, to you and then to each other. I pray as a church that we would be known as a church that have strong marriages, that we honor our spouses and we treat them with love and respect. We commit ourselves, Lord, to you. In your precious name, amen.